By now you should all have copies of the two-page chart on the missionary enterprise, which is, I believe, our third chapter of the textbook that we're using. If I may stand next to our lady here, I'll feel more secure. As most of you know, this class is on the contrast between Catholicism and Protestantism. The textbook I published some years ago called Christianity in Conflict. And what it does, through about a dozen chapters, it compares what the Protestants hold, which differs from Catholicism. There are two main reasons for a course like this. One is for the practice of charity towards our fellow Christians who are Protestants. The second, of course, is to foster an authentic ecumenical movement without compromising our own faith. I think I should say this before we start the class proper. I was on the Bishop's Commission for Ecumenism, and some years ago I was asked by the bishops to stay at least a day or two in Washington with the ecumenical branch of the United States Catholic Conference. Their annual budget was about $1 million, maybe $1.5 million, for promoting ecumenism from their Washington offices. I had access to all their books, their expenses, how they spent their money. And I spent one full day with the whole staff in Washington. Then I reported back to the bishops, and my advice was to close the Department of Ecumenism of the United States Catholic Conference. Of course, not everybody appreciated the advice that I gave. But among the problems that I found facing the bishop's ecumenical commission was that, in their no doubt laudable effort to promote Christian unity, so many of those working in this area either did not understand their own Catholic faith well enough, or among the Protestants on the commission, and I worked with them, they were persuading Catholics, with a net result that I believe the ecumenical commission in the United States was not benefiting the Catholic Church. First, what are we talking about in this class? It is on the missions, the missionary enterprise, or missionary apostolate of the Protestant churches. Why is this important by way of introduction? The Protestant missions are in open competition with the Catholic missions. Not to know that is not to know what the Church's mission work is all about. I will say, and not hesitate saying it, I believe Catholic missions are undergoing the gravest crisis of their almost 2,000 years of history. And one contributing factor has been the widespread growth and development of the Protestant missionary enterprise. Again, there has been a major shift in the 20th century among Protestant missionaries. Major shift. Almost 180 degree change in policy. After the Second World War, many once nations that had been colonies of the powerful countries in Europe, notably England, France, Holland, Belgium, Spain, Italy, and Portugal, no one knows the exact figure unless you've made a professional study, but I would estimate 50 nations became freed from their colonial masters. The British Empire ceased with the close of the Second World War. It controlled most of the world. England controlled politically most of the world for the Second Vatican Council. As a result, the shift in the Protestant missions was historic. From trying to evangelize and convert non-Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, tribal people in Africa, the shift in Protestantism was and now is mainly to convert Catholics. If you learn nothing else from these classes here in Ann Arbor, I beg you to both hear what I'm saying and listen carefully. I don't know the exact budget of the Protestant missionary work throughout the world. My estimate, it is at least $20 billion every year. However, I should say that of all the Catholic Church's missionary work throughout the world, their concentration is on converting Catholics from Catholicism to Protestantism. You will never know, never, why the Catholic Church is in such a deep crisis unless you know that. Organized, highly financed, professionally directed conversion, as they call it, of Catholics. The most powerful television stations in South America are all owned by wealthy, powerful Protestant denominations financed by the United States. And Mother Angelica, thank God, has been able to survive only because of enough Catholics who are willing to support her. They go on. Zeal to convert Catholics He read something, remember, in the last class. It's an ocean of anti-Catholic literature. What's the effect of this shift in the Protestant so-called missionary enterprise? It has changed the meaning of ecumenism radically. And of course, what makes it more difficult is that, and listen to this, you may never hear this again, part of the massive program of discrediting Catholic priests is part of this enterprise. Do you still hear me? Including the seduction of Catholic priests by both men and women. I think I've shared this with some of you. And in my first year at Western Michigan, told by one of my confreres in the department, John, can I talk to you privately in your office? So we talked. He told me, we've been watching you all year. None of us, all Protestants in the department, he watched you. None of us believes, or shall I say, believed, that Catholic priests are faithful to their vow of celibacy. So we kept an eye on you. He watched you carefully. Then we hired a woman to seduce you. I'm sorry to say, I'm quoting, I'm sorry to say, we paid her what she did not earn, her salary. I don't have to read this in books. Part of my life. Then, of course, the uneven financial resources of the Church's Catholic missions and the Protestants who have money, to put it mildly, to spare. The role of British colonialism, nobody will ever understand, only God fully comprehends, what Henry VIII did when he broke with the Catholic Church. And notice why he broke with the Catholic Church. He wanted to discard his wife, Catherine, and the Pope told him, sorry, Henry, you're a married man. The bishop sided with him. And remember the one who did not side with Pope, pardon me, with Henry VIII? Remembers the name? Saint John Moore. St. John Moore, is that what you're saying? Thanks for being the two together. St. John Fisher and Thomas Moore. Who remembers the year they were martyred? 1935. Molto bene. In other words, the bishop sided with Henry because they were afraid of being beheaded. But, by the way, they no longer use the word Great Britain. either in England, they don't use it, or the British Empire, they don't use it anymore. Thank God. Because what we may have learned in our history courses about the colonial empire of England, oh no, the British were not, to put it mildly, just acquiring territory. What they were doing is reshaping the minds of millions . And in God's providence, we speak English, the most spoken language in the world. Did you know that? One of our jobs, I keep telling you, make sure you Catholicize the English language. Watch your language. When you speak, be sure that the meaning that you have to the words you use are those of your Catholic faith. And finally, the reported annual loss of 1 million professed Latino American Catholics in North and South America. That's the annual loss. Now we take up each of the sections for the present class. First, the historical background. Before the rise of Protestant colonialism, there was no real missionary enterprise among Protestants. And this, as I've said so often, most of the books that our children use in school, you name them, literature, history, geography, should be rewritten. Because behind Protestant colonialism, and notice the term I'm using, behind Protestant colonialism was the motive not just to colonize a people, but to Protestantize them. And the most powerful nations that exercised his influence, we all know, were especially England and strange Holland, the most ideologically Protestant nation in the world is Holland. And then shortly after the Second Vatican Council, the Dutch came out of what they called the Catholic Catechism. It could just as well be called the Protestant Catechism. And every bishop of Holland approved that text. They go on. There were deeply religious motives behind the Protestantized countries. In other words, and I hope I'll be clear, whatever Luther had in mind, only God knows, when he broke with the Catholic Church. But from the very beginning, all the Protestant leaders got their backing from the civil authorities. No exceptions. None. In other words, what they did, those who broke away from the Catholic Church, in protest, that's what Calvin means, in protest, and especially in protest against the Pope. The leaders of Protestantism realized and let's pray, by the way, because this is serious. I do not want to teach another class in Ann Arbor with this noise. So pray that we'll be able to, not now, of course, we'll be able to get a place for class without the noise. Behind the colonialism of these Protestant nations was, of course, the search for power. And let's face it, you exert most power over a people not by the sword or with military weapons. How do you exercise your power? With ideas. As Karl Marx said, the one who controls the reading and education of a nation controls that whole country. John Eliot is credited with being the first, as you might call them, Protestant missionary. Day 1604 to 1690, translations of the Bible into the languages, the native languages of the people who then were to be converted. Converted, of course, to that particular form of Christianity which they themselves were translating the Bible to make sure the people would then be Protestants. And this is where, where do I begin to describe how we need in our country. I'm saying these words, I say to myself, Hardin, use your head. Wake up to reality. There are Bibles, scriptures, in so many languages now, but translated by Protestants. Because there was not enough mazuma, not enough money to pay for a good Catholic text of the sacred scriptures with corresponding commentary. Among my jobs for the Holy See over the years has been providing documentary information from the Vatican for the witnesses in the Catholic Church, and especially in English-speaking countries. And of course, I had to find the money to translate from the languages in which the documents were first written in Rome, put them into English, and this, I was told, was a bargain. 10 cents for every word they translated, including the A's and the buzz. And the price now, I'm no longer doing that work. The price now is higher. the dedicated, sacrificial, generous support of the church's apostolic work. How we need it. Another big name, there are two big names in Protestant missionary work, Elliot and Carey. Needless to say, both Britishers. William Carey in India, translating the Bible. And of course, when you're in India, it's not just Hindi. It is so many dialects in which the people speak. The concentration on evangelizing India, by 1910, what happened? It threatened a massive conflict among Protestant denominations. In other words, it's one thing for the Protestants to do missionary work, but what happens? I know the exact figure. 205 Protestant churches, denominations in India, when Mahatma Gandhi began to exercise his influence. These missionaries could not agree that's Protestantism. They not only came into existence by protesting against the Catholic Church, they are constantly protesting against each other. As a result, in 1910, they decided, look, we Protestants, let's get together. Otherwise, our missionary work will be destroyed. So then, in 1910, was started. Do I have it on your page? Yes. Was started in the International Missionary Council. By 1921, the council was in existence, and then there have been conferences ever since. The last one of which I have record is 1958. The IMC's history, International Missionary Conference, provided the control by the Americans, because the American missionaries in other countries of Protestant vintage were more conservative than were those of other countries. And although both the missionary council still exists, it has by now been deeply, shall I say, infected by the World Council of Churches. I may have told some of you, in the mid-50s, when the World Council of Churches was going to have its first World Convention in Chicago, to be exact, in Evanston at Northwestern University, I was instructed by the Holy See to penetrate that conference. I never felt more like a Jesuit. I was given permission by the Holy See to remove my clerical garb. I felt guilty until I got, into the car. I even changed in the back of the car. put on a bright suit, a flashy tie, and then, oh, I had all the accreditation I needed. And walked among these people, friendly with them. And of course, I knew much more about Providentism than they did. For sheer joy. Well, after the 3 weeks were over, I think I told you again, I was to gather all the information, all the minutes of every meeting held. I made friends with the leaders. Of course, I did not tell them what I was doing with this information. And then made, I still have it. Is Cassandra here? You could find somewhere the, what do they call them, very small tape recording, microfilm? Microfilm. Now this is the photographs.
Microfilm?
Yes. 65 feet of microfilm. All the documents. Nothing happened at Evanston, which the Holy See did not have a copy of. Isn't that wonderful? After the meetings, I'd always go back to the car, put my clerics back on. In the meantime, the World Council of Churches has been, as I'm sure you heard, penetrated by some very strange ideas, especially by the Orthodox churches, who for 70 years, as you know, have been under the control of communism. So much for part one. Now the growth and variety. The progress of all the Protestant missions throughout the world is mainly due to financial support from the United States. A major shift, which I've referred to before and I'm going to expand on it a little more now, from Asia and Africa, since the Second World War, what happened? As these countries became freed from their colonial, well, control by countries like England, like Holland, especially those two, others too, Norway, Sweden, but especially England. The freedom these people wanted was freedom to live their own lives. They shaped constitutions, and of course their constitutions, depending on the nature of the country and of the people, their constitutions, some did and some did not provide for what we call religious liberty. Or even where liberty was on paper allowed, the dominant religious culture of those people then became established pretty much as a state religion. And the most important was, the most important was Islam. The last thing that countries that became way to organize as nations, but had a majority Muslim population. The last thing they wanted was Protestant missionaries. As a result, most of these newly liberated countries drove the Protestant missionaries out of their new nations. Now, the most serious for the Catholic Church was India, which by now, as you know, has become more than one country. There is India, there's Pakistan, there's Bangladesh, there's Nepal, and other countries in the making. And one reason is because of the strong support by the Muslims. Without the Muslims, Mahatma Gandhi would never have freed India. It's a bargain. Gandhi, he will help you free India if you help us form Muslim nations. And two, as you know, have sprung up in what used to be called India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. As a result, and India, of course, touches us very deeply, and us Jesuits particularly. As a result, in India, no missionary is allowed by law to evangelize in India, forbidden by law. And you can have been there for years. If you're accused of trying to convert somebody, you are charged and either find yourself in a lawsuit or removed from the country. A further result has been that a native clergy, thank God, has developed in more than one of these nations, but not always, because a native clergy means native education. Somebody has to educate these people, and so many of these natives do not have the resources to be educated, say, in the Catholic faith. In any case, the consequence was what we've been saying before, that a political liberation from colonial control by England, Holland, and Protestantized colonial powers, then exported, and listen to this, within eyeshot of the mother house of the Missionaries of Charity in Calcutta. Huge building, I would say housing easily 200, maybe 250 sisters living in, well, in dormitories, a large number. How many beds, many they could get into, as many as they could get into a large room. And as you look outside, there was this beautiful landscaped Anglican church, cathedral, stained glass windows, the latest in British architecture. And along the streets, as I've said before, I think to you, depending on the time of the day, thousands on the streets and sidewalks of Calcutta, some still alive, some dead, some, well, carry a night's rest along the curbing. Now the classic experience in India. As you know, in India, Hinduism believes in the caste system, divides into four major castes, many subsidiary castes. Gandhi decided, as we know, to form a nation among his people. And I hope you read this or hear it again. Gandhi would never have become the world leader for unifying his people except for his deep devotion to Jesus Christ. His thinking was shaped by Christianity. He always carried with him a copy of the New Testament and hear it, an imitation of Christ. In any case, once he decided to unite his people, he realized there's no way India can be united unless we drive out these foreign missionaries. We've got enough division in our people already. As a result, India expressly, clearly forbids any convert work, any missionary work in that nation. And the consequences have been enormous. Have both been beneficial on one side, but also disastrous on another. Beneficial because it, of course, it inspired zealous Catholics to form a native church in India. And among the casualties, how many have ever even heard or maybe read anything by Archbishop Goodyear, the Jesuit, Archbishop of Bombay, from Britain? And his works, by the way, are classics for Catholic reading. Life of Christ, many books which he published. Well, one of the first things that he did was to resign as Archbishop of Bombay, and back to England and spent his life, oh, by the way, writing books. On the debit side, however, a church which forbids what they call foreign influence becomes more and more affected by the culture of that nation. And the dominant culture of India, needs to say, is Hinduism and Buddhism. And now, listen to this. And the now Catholics from India have been exporting their brand of Catholicism to other countries, and the New Age movement in the United States is only a tribute to their success. Do you still hear me? The New Age movement comes from India. Divisiveness on divorce and contraception among the Protestants. A habit under India, but I could have placed it. I could have.